You're listening to Leaders Portfolio Audiocast on leadersportfolio.com. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith, talking with leaders from across the D.C. area. Here in studio, the co-founder and CEO of ClearSpring Technologies, Hooman Radfer. Welcome, Hooman, to Leaders Portfolio.
Thank you for having me.
Now, ClearSpring Technologies is a widget and sharing network connecting publishers and advertisers to audiences on the social web. You have logged more than, I had written down, 332 million unique visitors worldwide, but you told me off air that it went up to not only 656 million, but you're projected to do 1 billion.
Yeah. So our platform, AdThis, is the largest content sharing platform used by publishers. We're used by about 1.2 million publishers. So those are websites like NBC, properties run by AOL, MySpace. And via those properties, we reach a lot of users. So Comscore, which is the third-party independent tracking mechanism, has us most recently at about 656 million users that we track as of January. So our internal numbers have us going up to about a billion per month.
And so let's talk then about this timeline for you guys as a company. You graduated from University of Pennsylvania with a bachelor's in economics, computer science, and you got a master's at Carnegie Mellon University, where you actually worked on social networking theory. And so then at 2004, you started an idea of what ClearSpring Technologies is.
Yeah, so myself and my office mate at the time, Austin Fath, we founded the company. And really in 2004, we had some ideas. Austin was very much focused on how do you turn the web into a platform for delivering services, not just a bunch of web pages. And I was very focused on social networks and how they could be transformative in applications. You know, if every application knew who you were, who your friends were, what would happen? And so we really wanted to build platforms in that space. We started in 04. We were doing consulting R&D up till 06 when we actually created a prototype product, which was very focused on widgets. And that's when we got our funding.
And you, and then you've had just fast growth since then.
Yeah, it's been pretty tremendous, actually. So in 2006, we were funded. We had a beta platform out in 2006. 07 was our official kind of launch, if you will. And from 2007 to about now, yeah, we went from zero to a billion.
And you, how many employees do you have?
Right now, we have, I believe, 33.
And so has it been harder to keep pace with the changing social networking space and still, or has it been harder to quickly build a company?
Well, I'll tell you, the challenges are intermingled. The social networking space has evolved rapidly. I mean, when we came into the market, MySpace was very much the centerpiece, and now it's become much more focused on Facebook and even Twitter and this idea of a real-time web. So keeping up with that while making sure that you're building, you know, business models and adding value to clients that's stable is difficult.
And also part of this timeline that's important is fall 2008, you did an acquisition for AdThis. And so that was that your first big acquisition?
Yes, that was the first acquisition.
So what, as a leader, did you learn through that process? And I'm going to ask you, what did you do right and what did you do wrong?
Wow, loaded question. So that had been my first acquisition personally, as well as the company's. So we learned a lot of things. So first off, you don't know what you don't know. So when you're acquiring a company, you're acquiring their product. You know, there's a lot of unknown there, but there's also an unknown in terms of, do you have a shared vision? You know, at the beginning, you think you do. And luckily, we ended up having a very good shared vision, and the acquisition was very successful. I think things that we could have probably, what could we have done better? I think things we could have done better was just making sure that we had a better integration plan, not from a product perspective, but just from, you know, how we're going to position a marketing integration plan, if you will. How are we going to position externally over time? So hopefully the next time around, we'll do even better.
And are you at the point as a business, and you're VC funded by everything from Ted Leonsis to NEA, who we just had on the show, and to Novak Biddle. And so are you testing different revenue methods? My understanding is, as a business model, you give away the use of AdThis, but you're trying to, or are actually monetizing, giving that data to clients.
Right. So as a business, you know, our plan is to be profitable this year. and our business model has matured quite a bit over time. We, of course, are always testing new business models. So I think for us, that's a very important part of our culture, is that we're very data-driven, and we like to set up quick experiments, whether they're revenue-generating or they're going to impact some business driver that are revenue-generating. So we're always going to be testing. But with respect to our current model, the idea is AdThis is really a free platform. It adds value, helps publishers grow their audiences through sharing, users sharing the content. And then we leverage that data in aggregate to deliver audiences to advertisers.
And did it take some time to figure that out? Did you figure that out, or did your VCs figure that out, or some?
Well, I think with any idea, it's kind of a growth of a number of people. So we always knew from the outset that data was important to us, which is why we focused very early on taking that capital, investing in world-class analytics infrastructure. We actually process up to 10 terabytes of information per day, which is a lot. And we also have been very focused on analytics. So we could, if we wanted to, with our system, track every single YouTube video on the planet now, today. So we knew that the data was important, didn't exactly know how that was going to manifest. But as the space matured and as advertising has matured, we've seen a way that we can package that audience and that information into a reusable product.
And so I asked you off air, we were talking, and I said, you know, you got in this great space, social networking. And so how much of this was your hard work, but how much of it was also luck? Like, you ended up, you know, working on a master's in this area that then took off.
Yeah. So I would say there's a saying my football coach used to tell us, which is luck is preparation, where preparation meets opportunity. And a lot of it was preparation on our part. I think we have a great team. We've made sure that we have world-class investors. And to the degree that you set yourself up that way, when opportunity strikes, you know, you're positioned to move. So one of the things that I advise startups on is you want to there is a lot of luck. There's a lot of things that happen in terms of opportunities. But if you're not ready to capitalize on it, you can't do anything. So I think we've done a good job of making sure we have the right people at the table.
The other piece of that that's always interesting to me is how I see seasoned people turn down luck that they get and say, you know, we're not ready. Our infrastructure is not ready.
Yep. I think that's one of those things where you have to be able to say, being able to say no is actually as important, if not more important, than saying yes. So as a startup company, especially when you're in a hot space, I mean, you have tons of people coming in who want to work with you on various projects. They could take you in so many directions, and they all seem exciting. And so being able to be disciplined enough to say, you know, we're only going to be focused on 1 through 3, and the following criteria are how we're going to judge taking the one and really blowing it out. That's been something that I've personally learned, and I think the company has created a discipline around. It's really hard to do. Look at Facebook, for instance. I mean, everyone looks and says, oh, I can make so much money doing this, that, and the other. But they've stuck the course throughout the years and said, no, we're very focused on building a user base. We're going to continue to. And that's obviously resulted in a lot of value creation.
And when you left Carnegie Mellon or even Penn, did you know you wanted to do a startup?
Yeah, I think I figured out I wanted to start a company when I was 19. I didn't exactly know where. I knew it was in the tech space. At the time, obviously, software and web, you know, were very tied up. So I knew somewhere along those lines. It's always been a passion of mine. So I've done everything I can to position myself personally to do that.
But it happened quicker than you thought.
Well, I think it happens slower. You know, when you're younger, you think everything happens right away. When I was in college, the dot-com boom was in full swing. So I had people that I knew who were selling companies for $7 million, getting ridiculous salaries. And so I'd even thought at that point that we would do it. And I was very focused at the time at Penn with one of my friends who now is working with me on this startup on trying to start a company in the video on demand space, which, as you know, now is very, very big. Mm-hmm. And at the time was not. And then the whole thing collapsed and, you know, we went back to school.
All right, we're speaking with Hooman Radfar. He's the co-founder and CEO of ClearSpring Technologies, and you were named one of tech's best entrepreneurs in Business Week and nominated for Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. So my question for you is, what's your leadership philosophy?
Well, the way that we look at it, I think as a company and as a management team, is the successes that we have belong to our team, and any failures or any problems belong to us. And so if we guide the company based on that type of principle, we tend to have the best results because it makes us more effective and take more responsibility but it also makes our team feel better about the accomplishments, because really they're the folks that are doing the work.
I like that a lot. I think it's good. I think I might have possibly practiced that, not knowing that statement. So I like that one. And also, you have this thing called Formal Fridays at Clear Spring Technologies. I like this one.
That was kind of a joke that came up. So what ended up happening is we have a very informal culture in terms of dress. So I would wear pajamas to work sometimes and such. My brother actually works with us, Cyrus, and he runs our advertising products, and he was making fun of me, and he said it's embarrassing that our CEO wears pajamas to work. So he orchestrated this movement along with some of the other developers to actually dress up in suits. So one day I show up, they're all in suits, and it was like two guys, and it was three guys, and then we had one picture that was on our blog that was like 20 guys. So it's not necessarily an institution, but it's more of a joke, and they do it on occasion just to poke fun at the fact that we're so informal.
Do you ever jump on the bandwagon and wear suits, or are you still wearing pajamas on Fridays?
Well, it was in reaction to me, so I definitely will not do it. I don't wear suits.
And you're trying to prove that you can be successful without the corporate culture.
Well, I think we want to have a... I always laugh because having a culture of accountability, having a culture of decision-making, we do enforce. But it doesn't mean you have to be wearing a suit to do that. I think you have to be comfortable, and you have to work with really excellent people. So that's more important to me than what they wear.
And did I see you have sports and things at Clear Spring Technologies as well, right? Like,
we have a lot of different extracurricular activities available to our employees. So we have a little putting green and a huge projector with video game systems and, even a beer fridge, I'll admit it.
And was that your idea?
No, I mean, a lot of those things we have a very developer-centric culture. I was a developer, and so the guys, put together these things that would help them be entertained. But, one of the things we mentioned in the green room was, it doesn't really, you can put all these amenities in there, and people often ask me, oh, isn't it distracting, people messing around? And what ends up happening is if you have really great people, they self-regulate and they do great things, and it's just nice for them to have these things available. We have lunches served. Every day. And so if you do those things, you tend to attract better people, which ultimately results in more value created.
Have you found that it's easier than you thought to hire good people, or harder than you thought?
I think it's the hardest thing. I think, hiring good people is not a skill that you have or don't have. I think something that you cultivate over time, get pattern recognition. What makes a great salesperson is not what makes a great developer. And so yeah, I think that's the challenge, and I hope to be the best at that.
Did you? Has there been one particular problem that you've had to work through as a leader?
For the company or personally?
For the company.
I think that the largest, and I won't say problem, I think opportunity, and I know that folks at Google and Facebook and other companies have the same thing, is balancing the free products or the platform that's open. And the prioritization of that versus revenue generating opportunities, because mm-hmm. it's an ecosystem that we've created, because that's where the value comes in. So how much effort do you put in both? And I think that's always going to be an issue. If you look at Google, for instance, they're always going to kind of have that back and forth because they have shareholders that are public. So.
And what's interesting about that is you actually are in line with a lot of your media publishers, which I know that's a big part of your market share.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they have that same issue of, do we give away free stories to the New York Times or do we charge?
Right.
Right. So it's you actually, your clients, or even if some of them are free clients, have an understanding because they're going through
yep.
the same thing.
Yeah. I think in the online, the model is, there's always these struggles. Like, do you charge for your product on subscription? Is it ad supported? Mm-hmm. Is it free? And there's some sort of other, it's a marketing expense. And I think people need to balance that out quickly and figure it out, because there's models everywhere.
Well, I want to thank you for appearing on Leaders Portfolio. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Always good to have a Penn grad on, right? Hooman Radfar, co-founder and CEO of Clear Spring Technologies. I want to thank these exclusive sponsors of Leaders Portfolio: Dennis Cole Architects, WOW Services Group, Divine Inspiration Salon, Riverwalk, their development featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business meeting room needs. If you're trying to reach the business community directly, consider sponsoring Leaders Portfolio. We'd be glad to have you. I want to thank our senior producer, Dr. Ohlers, the production team, as well as Miguel, Jennifer, Christine, Marwa, Allison, Sonia. Hair and makeup by Ebel for Makeup, theme by CSH Entertainment. I enjoy speaking with you about leadership. This has been Rebecca Blacksmith asking you, what is in your portfolio?